Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Tuesday, November 3rd, 2015. I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, and it's election day today. So we're going to be talking about toxics and government regulations. And my guest today is Brian McGannon. He's the policy director for the American Sustainable Business Council, ASBC. You'll probably hear ASBC all through the show today instead of American Sustainable Business Council. And he leads the Washington office for the organization. He works with regulations all the time and knows all about what's going on here and is going to explain it all to us. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
Great.
Good. Well, first of all, tell us how you got interested in working on environmental issues, I guess is the way you're coming from an environmental perspective.
Yeah, so I've been working around politics for most of my career, and so one of the first kind of environmental activist jobs I had was working in California in the early 2000s on the energy crisis in California.
Mm-hmm.
It has
mm-hmm.
morphed into a variety of other campaigns. And when I arrived at the American Sustainable Business Council is when I really got to delve into toxic chemical reform. And that was about 4 years now. And it has been a steep learning curve, but it's remarkable how complicated, but, you know, kind of the clear path forward to kind of what really needs to get done to make a cleaner and safer world, especially in the marketplace.
And tell us, what does the American Sustainable Business Council do?
Yeah, so we are a business organization, a business policy organization, that is advocating for a sustainable, just, and robust economy. So through our membership, which is a group of business organizations as well as individual companies, a network that reaches about 300,000 small and medium-sized businesses, we advocate for policies that will build a sustainable economy, whether that is energy and environment issues, toxic chemical reform, but it also ranges from tax policy to campaign finance reform to sustainable agriculture. So there's a broad brush of issues that really feed into that broader notion of building a sustainable economy.
So you have a lot to do.
I do, and we have a great team. So thankfully, I don't have to do it all by myself.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so let's start with, first of all, let's assume that the listeners know nothing about this.
Okay.
And so let's start with, why don't you explain the current regulations? Aren't there several different regulations that refer to toxics?
There are, and it's kind of split up into different aspects. Pesticides is governed by a law that EPA implements. Chemical manufacture, just kind of general chemicals, is under the Toxic Substances Control Act, or TSCA. Cosmetics and personal care products are under a different law, and that's regulated by the FDA. So it's quite an interesting split out of things, and I'm sure there probably are some other small jurisdictions. Certainly states have some oversight, too, of chemicals in their states, but those are the big buckets of how toxics are kind of looked at by regulators.
But the most important one, I think, that people are looking at wanting to make change in is the Toxic Substances Control Act, TSCA.
That's correct. And so from TSCA was a law that was enacted in 1976, and it's kind of in that same era as the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, those major environmental bills and that became law. But the problem with the TSCA bill, the TSCA law, is that it was challenged in court and as they were trying to regulate asbestos, and the court found that the way the law was written had a flaw in it that basically put EPA in a analytical loophole cycle. So they could never prove beyond a reasonable doubt, or, you know, they had to measure against cost benefit. And so are they getting the best cost analysis? So basically broke the law. That case broke the law. So EPA had its hands tied on regulating chemicals since the mid-80s.
Could you explain how the government currently, I'm not quite sure how to ask this question. So I'm an individual and I can go to a toxicology book or to my website or environmental working group or many other places online and look at studies which say X chemical produces Y symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And I can decide that I don't want to be exposed to that chemical, and I can find products that don't have it. But what seems odd to me is that why can't the government look at those very same studies I'm looking at and everyone else is looking at and say, this is a toxic chemical, it shouldn't be allowed on the market?
Yeah, so the government can look at it, they can research it, they can develop data, and many times they do. But what happens with they need the authority to take an action on those chemicals. And that the TSCA law, originally, the intention of the TSCA law was to give the EPA the authority to make a regulatory judgment that Chemical X is a harm to human health or the environmental health. And these are the remedies that the government can take. We can restrict it. We can ban it. Limit it in certain ways in the marketplace. Because the law doesn't work, EPA can research what it has the capacity to research, but it can't take an action on those chemicals. Now there are smaller provisions that are very arcane that give the EPA some limited access to restricting use of chemicals. But, you know, there's been very few. I mean, if we're talking, you know, bear in mind there are 60 to 80,000 chemicals in commerce. Not all are used right now, but this is a scale of the problem. Very few of those have been formally reviewed and had an action. I think maybe 5 or 6 have actually been restricted.
5 or 6. So let me just say this back to you, so to make sure I heard this right, that the government doesn't have the authority. That's the problem. It's not that they can't make a decision that something's toxic. It's that they don't have the authority to do anything about it.
The federal government, that's correct.
The federal government.
Yes. So the states have stepped up and in many cases have filled that void with different types of laws. Kind of the big one is the Prop 65 in California, which is a labeling bill, which has basically, you know, it has shaped the marketplace where if you have something that is known to be cancer-causing chemical, you have to put a safety warning label on your product.
Let's talk about Proposition 65 for a minute. We need to go to break in a minute, but let's start talking about this because Proposition 65, I lived in California when Proposition 65 first came out, and in theory, I think that it's a really good idea. I say over and over on this show that we shouldn't have to label things as being pure, like certified organic. We should say that applesauce has apples with pesticides on it. You know, that should be on the label.
Right.
And so I think that Proposition 65, in theory, is trying to do that. But what ends up happening is that sometimes they're required to put the label on things like a little tiny part that's on the inside of a washing machine that you're never exposed to.
Right.
And so it's, I think I recall that there was a label on a jar of instant iced tea once I looked at. And you know, it's just the consumer gets to a point where you don't even look at it anymore. It's like the consumer doesn't look at all those warning and caution and all those things. We need to go to break, and when we come back, I want to hear what you have to say about
it. Sure.
Okay, you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Brian McGannon. He's the Policy Director for the American Sustainable Business Council and leads the Washington Office for the organization. Their website is asbcouncil.org, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Brian McGannon. He's a policy director for the American Sustainable Business Council, ASBC, and we're talking about government regulations regarding toxics. Okay, Brian, tell us about Proposition 65.
Yeah, so I think what, you know, what has been effective, certainly Prop 65 has, you know, some flaws, as does all legislation. There are kind of the unknown, unanticipated consequences. But our good friends at the Center for Environmental Health have a great report out that talks specifically about products that were reformulated nationally because of Prop 65. So Prop 65 did move the market. So a lot of corporations, you know, fear having that label of this, they're, you know, there's known carcinogen or things that are known to lead to cancer on your product. So they have moved and reformulated their products. So you know, CEH.org, the report, I think it's called State. I have it right here to give you the name. State Action National Change. So it's a fascinating study of you know, getting toxic chemicals out of toys. A number of companies that have reformulated, they re-engineered their products to take, you know, PERC out of their product cleaning solutions. I think that despite the some flaws in Prop 65, it does have a broad effect throughout the market, because corporations are not going to make a product for California and then a different product for the rest of the country. I mean, the California market, for example, is one of those big movers that if California doesn't, a company will have to address that issue.
That's correct. But, yeah, I see that too. So California, in a way, given that the government, the federal government in Washington, is not doing this, California has taken the lead and is making those changes, and they have other programs in California now that are evaluating other kinds of products. And we just had a change in, I forgot the number of the, but it's about the fire retardants.
Yep.
On furniture, and that took effect at the beginning of this year. And so this year we've seen a big change in more furniture being available without fire retardants.
The 117, there was initial before it, but that is, and you know, California is not alone. I mean, Washington State, Minnesota, Vermont, Connecticut, New York is undertaking an effort as well for children's products. These are, you know, significant marketplaces that are changing the laws, and they will benefit states like New Mexico and Colorado and Texas. You know, this actually feeds into a dynamic in the federal legislation as they're negotiating with these last changes that I'm sure we'll get to. But bookmark that, because it is important to know that the state level action does benefit the entire nation.
Yes, I think so. So then, and I would also say that I've looked at websites for these states and some of the things that they're doing, and so anyone, any of us citizens, could go there and see what are the list of chemicals that they're working with, that these states have identified chemicals that they want to eliminate from the marketplace. And so we can then say, okay, the government in those states has determined that these chemicals are toxic and mm-hmm. use those as guidelines for ourselves.
Absolutely.
We can, I mean, there are, I've actually been researching this and I've been finding many, many lists.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
It's
funny to be in some of these conversations, in kind of the legislative process at both state and federal level. I said, well, now which list are you talking about? Are you referring to the Washington list? Are you talking about the Minnesota list? Are you talking about the EPA work plan list? It's roughly the same kind of batch of numbers of which chemicals, but they all vary. But it is a great starting point. But it does take time, and that's, it's not for every consumer to be able to have to do that. And that's why it's vital that the government have the authority to, do the science, make, really sound judgments on what chemicals should be restricted and how they should be available in commerce.
I agree. So I just wanted to ask you kind of off the subject here, mm-hmm. but and I don't have it right in front of me, but I think didn't the Senate decide that GMOs were safe?
They have not. So there's a bill moving through both House and Senate the folks who want to ban or at least label it's a bill that would restrict the states from having a labeling program for GMOs. And so the folks on our side of the table who believe that the states should have the right to label it, call it the DARC Act.
Right.
It had a hearing at the state level in the Senate Agriculture Committee, and they've—I don't know if they've had the Ag Committee has actually taken a vote on it yet or not—but the Democratic ranking member voiced her support for that, so that kind of ensures that it will kind of move through. It has already passed the House, so it doesn't look good at this point. I mean, there's. Just like Tosca, there's a long way to go to actually get it passed. But it is, it's if you want to know what's in your stuff, that it's not the best feeling in the world that it's going to be moving through the Senate.
Yeah, well, again, we get back to, and I'll probably say this five times during the hour, we get back to consumers needing to look for negative labeling where mm-hmm. it says there's no GMOs in this instead of saying that there uh-huh. are GMOs. And I've seen some labels from Europe where they actually put on, this is GMO soy and uh-huh. And it's GMO corn and whatever. And I think that that's part of the ingredients.
I haven't worked on that issue as much, but I think that you're on to something about that kind of positive labeling, and I think companies would appreciate that it is not a skull and crossbones. We don't want to put that on all of our products, but you do have the right to know that there are elements of this product that you should.
Yeah, we need to go to break and we'll come back and talk about this some more. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd and my guest today is Brian McGannon. He's the policy director for the American Sustainable Business Council, ASBC. They're in Washington, D.C., and they work on policies that have to do with making the world more sustainable. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Brian McGannon. He's the policy director for the American Sustainable Business Council, ASBC, in Washington, D.C., and their website is asbcouncil.org. Brian, if California and other states are doing such a good job of moving us in the right direction, why do we need federal regulations?
Well, the states are taking kind of very narrow approaches like Prop 65 doesn't necessarily ban anything. It just labels things. Right now, asbestos can't be banned under current law. Everybody knows it's a horrible thing, and lawsuits and huge settlements have been paid out of it. But it is not, under TSCA, banned. So, we need a functioning system that is national, has a basic standard that has a clear scientific process that can evaluate chemicals in commerce that has the authority to restrict.
I totally agree with you. So what has been done already, and why has it not succeeded? What are the problems we're running into?
As far as why we can't get to that process?
Well, what have we already done? I know there's been some bills introduced about TSCA reform that
yep.
haven't gone through. Mm-hmm. And so what has already been done? How long have we been working on this? And where are we now, and what needs to be done?
Yeah, so efforts to reform TSCA have been underway for a number of years. There have been a number of folks that have been probably since the early 90s that have been trying to address this. This is the one major environmental law that has not been updated. Clean Air Act has had updates. The Clean Water Act has had updates. Mm-hmm. And so efforts at fixing TSCA have been thwarted either by chemical manufacturers that have seen the legislation as being adverse to their business interests. So there have been legislative attempts, and where we are today is that we have probably the closest progress to getting TSCA reform done. It is not an ideal solution, but there is a potential to get some incremental progress and get EPA the authority to start reviewing chemicals as a kind of a baseline ability. Senator Lautenberg, the late Senator Lautenberg from New Jersey, was a champion in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And had the Safe Chemicals Act, which was a bill that a lot of the environmental health organizations, as well as ASBC, had endorsed. He eventually crafted a compromise with Senator David Vitter from Louisiana that, once you scratch the surface, the compromise didn't look so good. Senator Udall from New Mexico has taken over for the late Senator Lautenberg and have carried a bill that has been improved, but still not really where we think reform should go. And that is pending on the floor of the Senate. So it's passed out of committee, and it is awaiting a full Senate vote. Now, the House has passed a smaller, more narrow bill that basically gives EPA the authority and the obligation to review 10 chemicals a year.
10 chemicals a year?
Well, so that seems like a minimum 10. That seems like a small amount. The Senate bill is even fewer. So that's these are, as I say, not ideal solutions, but they are incremental progress. So it's not a done deal because these two bills don't look like each other. And as we know in the legislative process, both sides have to agree to an exact identical bills before they go to the president to be signed into law. So there are features of the both of the House bill that I think that a lot of folks on our side believe are good features. And there are a few features in the Senate bill that are good features. The idea, where the current fight stands is that we think the Senate will eventually, if they can get time on the Senate floor, they will pass their version of TSCA reform. What we're busy advocating for is that when they try to marry these two bills, that they take the best, so we can get the best possible outcome. It's not a great outcome, but it's the best possible outcome in the process.
I just don't understand, and you may not have an answer to this, mm-hmm. but I want to say it anyway. I just don't understand how so many people in the world can look at these chemicals and know that they're toxic and decide that they don't want them in their lives, mm-hmm. and that the government can't put together enough agreement, I guess it's agreement, that if everybody in the House and the Senate could understand that these chemicals are toxic and they shouldn't be in consumer products, and that people are dying and that people are being crippled, and that people are just all these, they're getting cancer and all the things that these chemicals do.
Right. Well, there's two reactions to that. So one is the original law is very complicated, and that there's a lot of detail about how do you do it. There are a lot of vested interests as well that basically want to slow that process down. So, not beat around the bush, that there are, losers that would, by restricting chemicals, there are people that would lose out by not having their chemical in commerce.
Right, but they could do something else that's not so toxic.
And you know what? Businesses are smart and they innovate. I find that a false, kind of scenario as well. But the other kind of reaction to your premise is that, the consumers are becoming informed and they're making decisions and they're shaping the marketplace. A lot of Yay. The members in our organization, the companies that we are working with on this fight, are the ones who are being transparent. They're disclosing what's in their chemicals, or they're not using bad chemicals in their products.
Right.
So they are working hard to meet this increased consumer demand. And whenever I talk to members of Congress or their staffs, I always remind them that, look, our members are working to meet this increased consumer demand because it is out there. Parents are being more vigilant about the products they buy for their children. People who are cleaning homes or workplaces are being more vigilant about how their employees are being exposed. So those are that is really driving a lot of this kind of desire to get something done in Congress.
Good, good. We'll talk more about that when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Brian McGannon. He's the Policy Director for the American Sustainable Business Council, ASBC, and the website is asbcouncil.org. We'll be right back. Listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Brian McGannon, the Policy Director for the American Sustainable Business Council, ASBC. You know, Brian, when I first heard about toxic chemicals in consumer products in 1978, that was a long time ago, it was because I got really sick, and it turned out to be toxic chemicals in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? There's no toxic chemicals in my home. The government is watching out for us. I can just go into the store and buy anything I want, and nothing's toxic.
Right.
Until I found out that wasn't the case by getting sick.
Mm-hmm. That's the hard way. We have a mutual friend, Barry Chick, who co-founded Naturepedic, and he tells this fantastic story. Naturepedic makes crib mattresses with no flame retardants and no toxic chemicals. And he was having his first grandchild, and he went into the baby store to say, my wife sent me to get a crib mattress for our first grandchild, and he's got a background in toxic chemicals. And he looked at the label of all the products and said, it's got vinyl, it's got flame retardants, it's got, all these really bad things. And he asked, where's the, more natural product? And the store clerk said, if these things weren't safe, the government wouldn't let us sell them.
He really said that?
It's the best rap that he does that in every meeting we go to on Capitol Hill. And it is jaw dropping, isn't it? I think it's kind of the conventional wisdom.
It is the conventional wisdom. It's really hard for me to get information about, like, if I call a store and say, is this hat, does it have formaldehyde in it? They don't know what that is.
Right.
They really don't. And so we have all these people selling these products and they don't know anything about this issue.
Right. And another kind of aspect of chemical reform that is not really being addressed in the current legislation, but is vital to businesses that, like the ones we represent, is transparency in the supply chain.
Right.
So that, upstream, if you formulate a product, you're mixing things together and then you're selling it. And if you don't have, clear understanding of what's in the materials you're putting into your product, you can't validate to your consumer that this is a clean and safe product.
That's right.
So if, you know, the one thing that we fight for that, you know, we're probably not going to get this round on advocating is transparency in the supply chain. So there's a part of the law that protects confidential business information. So a lot of companies have been hiding behind this, and they just say, well, we're not going to tell you because it's our proprietary information. But if you could, you know, create that transparency through the supply chain, the market would really drive companies to be really more open and be able to say, I know with a great degree of certainty that my product does not contain anything known to be hazardous to you.
Right. Right. There are some companies working on it. Like I know Seventh Generation is a company that's working on like really understanding their supply chain. And part of the problem is that there's so many, I think a lot of consumers don't know what I'm about to say. I didn't know it when I first started doing my work, which is that, you know, you can see some ingredients on the label. A lot of products don't have ingredients even listed.
Right.
Let's take like a personal care product where it lists the ingredients. Most consumers don't know that those products are made because when you go to the factory, it's a barrel of this and a barrel of that, and they mix it up like you mix a recipe in your kitchen. But the person who's making it, the company that's making it, all they're doing is putting barrels of stuff together. They don't know where that stuff came from. They don't know what's actually in it. It's just, you know, XYZ chemical.
Right. It is. And there's a lot of, one thing I learned was that, you know, there's a lot of steps in that value chain. So that if you may know who the person you're buying that barrel of X from, but that it's just a commodity. And so they, you know, it could be coming, you know, they don't know where the seller doesn't know where it's coming from. They have no reason, they have no obligation to declare where it came from. So it is really amazing that's how this, and, you know, then you, there's a whole process of, with the personal care products of having, you know, the fragrances are one of the right. biggest that hide some of the worst chemicals, and they don't have to disclose. And they don't have to tell their formulation, and that's a real challenge, especially in the personal care products. And even in household cleaning products, I know a lot of our members don't use fragrances because they can't validate what the materials in those fragrances are.
Yeah, that's so good. I know that when I'm recommending website, I have part of my website is Deborah's List, where I put links to websites that sell these toxic-free products. And a lot of them are not big-name products that are in stores. A lot of them are little tiny businesses where they're taking those ingredients from the field where they grew them and turned them into a product. So they know what it is. It's very simple.
It really is. And, it, you know, and a lot of the businesses in this space really did start that way. And it, you know, they have grown as the market has grown, but, you know, there's a lot of folks like Seventh Generation and, you know, Burt's Bees and, you know, just a whole bunch of them have really started out of, Badger's another great example, when it was they were just mixing, you know, lip balm in their home in New Hampshire, and it's just, their products have just taken off. Because, again, the demand is there. I think, you know, the advent of the Internet, information is available. You have access to government research, you have academic research, you can, you know, have, you know, mom groups, the, you know, mom bloggers are fantastic researchers, you know, you don't want to cross them, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. So I think from my viewpoint, I think that we do need to have government regulations, like the government should, it's kind of like there's a bunch of pieces of the pie here, and that it's not just one thing or another, that we need the consumers to want the products. Because I know way back when I first started doing this, a lot of people were saying, well, we would make something less toxic, but nobody will buy it. But that's not the case anymore. And so consumers need to want the products. Retailers need to want to sell them. Manufacturers need to make them. And the government needs to ensure that there isn't toxic chemicals. Doctors need to recognize that there are toxic chemicals making people sick and treat them appropriately instead of giving them drugs. And so...
No, I was just going to say, I think that's a great way to describe it, that there are many aspects to this that, you know, we need to be active on all of them.
Yes, I totally agree. And consumers definitely have our part, and the manufacturers definitely have their part.
Right.
So it's so great that you have so many businesses that are concerned about this.
Absolutely. And you know what? And it's not every day that you have businesses saying we want regulation. I mean, it's kind of the typical narrative in Washington that all businesses think regulation is bad. But you know what? Well done, well crafted, the regulation drives innovation. It's going to create jobs, especially in the green chemistry field, which is a just burgeoning field of chemistry that is, you know, built around creating chemicals that are effective, cost competitive, and reducing the toxicity of them, and that it is a huge opportunity. And so what happens is, if you are going to regulate, you know, let's say there's 80 chemicals on the EPA work plan, you know, investors and inventors will look and be able to say, EPA is eventually going to regulate these chemicals. That might be one smart place for me to go try to find a substitute or develop a substitute that I could eventually sell to replace that chemical and do it in a non-toxic way.
I totally agree. And, you know, I was just thinking that when I made the decision so many years ago that I was going to eliminate these toxic chemicals from my life because they were making me sick, and I did, and I got well. And but the thing is that I am not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. I'm not any of those things. I'm just, you know, a homemaker.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I need to wash my hair and wash my dishes and make my bed and all those things. And I had to figure out how I was going to do each and every one of those things without toxic chemicals. And I did. And other people have done that too. And so to me, there's no excuse for every company in the world to not do that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it is... You know, it's the future, right? And I think you are seeing more and more companies striving to do better in their supply chain. Some are better than others. But, you know, you are seeing these, especially the big chemical manufacturers, even have really big green chemistry programs.
That's
because
great.
That is, they see the writing on the wall, too. The marketplace that is taking them there, they realize that the government will step in, whether it's the state governments or the federal government. So, you know, it's encouraging, and we hope it will happen faster. But it is sustainability throughout the business cycle is a vital component, and I think that's where we're heading towards.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been so informative. We've got about 45 seconds left. Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Well, I want to encourage folks to get engaged. If you're a business owner, you know, go to asbcouncil.org and click on our campaigns. We've got a Companies for Safer Chemicals campaign. One of our ally organizations is the Safer Chemicals Healthy Families Coalition, and that's a great place for individuals to get plugged in to see what's happening and how they can get active. And that's saferchemicals.org. So those are could use as much help as we can, and you know, it's the fight's not over, and we're going to continue to make the marketplace a good, sustainable place as hard as we can.
Thank you so much. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Be well.